If you run a Shopify store, listen up. Shopify's got you covered for selling, but when your shipping volume grows and you're juggling multiple plugins just to get orders out the door, you need tools that can keep up. Stop duct taping your shipping workflow and use the tools that work better together, like Shopify and ShipStation. Think of ShipStation as Shopify's dedicated shipping partner. ShipStation goes beyond just shipping labels to save you time and money by automating the entire order fulfillment process, from syncing your orders all the way through inventory management and returns. Automate the rate browser to select the lowest rates on shipments, with discounts up to 90% off major carriers like USPS, UPS, and FedEx. No wonder businesses that use ShipStation grow 3 times faster on average and ship 15 times more orders. See how ShipStation can help you scale and boost your Shopify sales. Go to ShipStation.com and access all features free for 30 days. No credit card or contract required. Cancel anytime. That's ShipStation.com.
It's gone too far, Raven. I don't know about you, but I feel like after every single thing I do online, in person, in a store, or whatever, I'm asked to take a survey. Have you realized that lately?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everything requires a review. And the truth is I actually try and be pretty diligent about it now because I know what it matters to businesses. You know, as a business owner myself, reviews is one of those things that you're chasing down all the time.
Oh, but it's getting a little bit obnoxious. Like, every time I go to a doctor's appointment, I don't need you to send me a follow up to see how the appointment went. Like, I showed up, right? Isn't that like half the battle?
Am I still alive, right, to answer this email? I should be able to just verify that I'm breathing.
On a scale of 1 to 5, the receptionist treated you within 2 to 4 minutes, within 4 to 5. I'm like, are you serious right now? But anyway, this comes up because it's been bothering me. But there's this New Jersey restaurant that's gone viral because they're threatening workers that if they don't get a certain amount of 5-star reviews every month on Google, they're going to lose their job. Like, think about the pressure. You just want to be a good waiter. You just want to serve your tables, get a good tip, move on with your life. And now you got to hound these people to leave you a 5-star review, too?
Well, you know, I mean, asking is at least half of the battle, right? And if you make a connection with somebody, you can kind of guilt them into doing it. Nowadays, with the little screens that are at the tables, I mean, devil's advocate, again, as a business owner, knowing how important they are, if I knew more about the restaurant, it might help. Maybe this is one of those places where everybody wants to work, right? I mean, if those places still exist during the pandemic staffing stuff. But if those places still exist, you remember what it was like as a server to get a job at a place that you knew you were going to make money, you knew was a hot spot. In that context, would it really be that big of a deal?
I don't know. To me, it just seems like this is taking it too far. I feel like all of it has gone too far with the reviews because they're not genuine. Do you remember the time that I went to that place for a back massage? It was the first time I ever went in there. The place was as shady as could be. It was not a good experience. On the way out, the lady would literally not let me leave until I tapped 5-star on the Google review. That was a real thing that happened, to the point where I almost felt threatened because she had it in front of my face and she was like, 5-star, tap 5-star. And I was like, what? Okay. And I had no idea what I was doing. And then I realized, yeah, she just tricked me into giving a good review so that like people would go there. And the truth of the matter is it was terrible.
You know what? I mean, as fast as you were at that current time, and as stretched out, as relaxed as you were, you should have been able to dive out the door before she got you.
I'm just saying, it's going a little bit too far.
Goose Baba. It's Wellness Wednesday.
Don't freak out.
With Anna and Raven.
Usually Wellness Wednesday is all about things that you can do to make your own life better. But today, Raven, it's something that you can do to make your children's lives better, which is pretty awesome, right? And it's something that I yell at my husband not to do. I don't know. I'm not exaggerating. 17 times a week, I tell him not to do it. Turns out that he was right when I came across this.
Gosh.
You want your child or children to grow up to be successful, well-adjusted, moral adults. Which is exactly why you need to body slam your child every now and then.
What?
What? Roughhousing. They're saying that you should be roughhousing your kids, and there's reasons why you should be roughhousing. My husband is that guy, that dad, that he comes in, and if he sees a little kid that goes up to his kneecaps, he's throwing them upside down. He's flipping them upside down. He's like, you know, he's grabbing them, and it gets a little too rough, and you're going to hurt!
Tickle monster the pool, throwing them halfway across the pool. I love that. That was my dad. That's good.
So what are the reasons why roughhousing is good for your kids?
Roughhousing boosts your kids' resilience. The unpredictable nature of roughhousing actually rewires a child's brain by increasing the connections between neurons in the cerebral cortex, which in turn contributes to behavioral flexibility.
I mean, that sounded like a whole lot of science for saying it's cool that we broke his wrist. I mean, it's maybe just a sprain. Sounds like a whole lot of science on that.
Basically, it's saying like, well, it teaches them to predict the unpredictable. Like, yeah, it's like if you're being attacked, you got to figure out a way to survive.
Yeah.
Roughhousing makes your kids smarter. Psychologist Anthony Pellegrini has found that the amount of roughhousing children engage in predicts their achievement in first grade better than their kindergarten test scores do.
I love this. So now on top of it, not only do you need to be roughhousing, but you got to get them young. fight that kid when they're 3 or 4 or 5 years old.
Roughhousing builds social intelligence. Researchers have found that children who engage in frequent roughhousing are almost always more socially and emotionally adept than kids who don't.
You know what? I'm just going to say that actually makes a lot of sense. There's nothing worse than the kid that has never been, they never fell over, right? They never, you know, tripped with their friend or running around with their friend or skinned their knee in the driveway or anything like that. I mean, that kid is at a deficit. That kid is, you know what I mean? They're behind the other kids when they go to school. I agree with that.
And every mom knows that when your kid gets hurt, the first thing you do is don't make eye contact and pretend like it didn't happen.
Right.
So, and you hope that, you know, they can just kind of pull themselves together and move on with it.
They'll be braver if they know that their mom isn't there. Right.
Roughhousing teaches morality. When we roughhouse with our sons and daughters, they learn boundaries and the difference between right and wrong. If they start hitting hard or aiming below the belt or becoming malicious, you can reprimand them and then show by example what's appropriate roughhousing behavior.
Right. So your punch was too low, but this one's good.
But I'm telling you, without fail, with my husband, with all my nephews and my nieces and my daughters and all that, at some point, somebody's getting hit in the privates. It happens all the time. And then I'm like, that's it! Somebody's going to go to the emergency room! No more playing!
Yeah. Roughhousing gets your kid physically active. Studies have shown that fathers, and not the mother's activity level and weight, strongly predict what their children's activity level and weight will be as adults.
Okay, it's a lot of justifications. I mean, I don't know.
Right, so they're saying good types of roughhousing include playing horsey, right, which is not good for your back. I'm just warning you, but, you know, good. Scoop a bed, so that's when you pick them up and then you toss them on the bed. Playing airplane, which I always thought broke their ribs, but turns out I was wrong. You know, like when you lay on your back and you put your feet up and they lay on your, like your feet and you do airplane.
Go higher. Turbulence.
And the good old baby suplex wrestling, when you just take your kid and you slam him down on the couch, says, go for it. It's good for them.
They're so easy to flip upside down.
I know it's a common problem that a lot of parents have, Raven, because some kids are just those kids that are tough. They don't want to try new foods. They don't want to eat. Mm. But I think I get so frustrated because I'm not a new mom. You know, I'm an older mom. I've got two kids. My older one is 13 years old. So the problems I have with Dakota is when other people try to give me advice on how to get her to eat, my 3-year-old.
Yeah.
That, like, I get defensive. I'm like, you don't think I tried that? You don't think I did that?
Yeah, I've kind of covered this gamut before, right? I understand. But, you know, people with babies especially, they just want to talk. They just want to be so helpful.
But maybe I'm missing something. How do you get your kids to eat? You can call or text 1-800-330-9999. This is a normal conversation that I have with my toddler, Dakota, at least 3 times a week.
Dakota, what do you like to eat?
I like to eat hot dogs and bananas.
Hot dogs and bananas? Anything else?
And strawberries.
Strawberries? But that's kind of it, right?
Chocolate chip cookies.
Chocolate chip cookies. Anything else?
No, that's it.
How about broccoli? Do you like broccoli?
No.
How about any vegetables?
No.
How about pasta?
No.
What kind of kid doesn't like pasta?
She doesn't even eat pizza, Raven.
I mean, not mac and cheese?
No.
Like, that's bad. Like, right? not noodles with butter?
Nope.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine?
That's bad. Yeah,
what
that's
happened?
Bad.
Like, what did I do wrong? Oh. It's so funny because it's like, she has never, when I say this, people think I'm kidding. Mm. She has never tried a vegetable in her life. Never.
Seems unhealthy.
I've tried everything. Yeah. She will not put it in her mouth. That yucky, mommy. Yeah. Mommy, that yucky.
You can't sneak it in other stuff. You can't put cheese on it. Usually cheese is the ultimate math. Look, don't get mad at me. I'm just asking. I'm not telling you to try that. I'm just asking.
No. She doesn't do, like, I don't know what to do, and I keep thinking, like, it's a phase, but, like, how many hot dogs can a child eat a day before it becomes disgusting? Like, she'll have a banana for breakfast, she'll have a hot dog and strawberries for lunch, and then most of the time she'll have a hot dog and strawberry again for dinner.
Hot dog and strawberries.
Yeah, in the same plate. Isn't that nasty?
It's a terrible combination.
I don't know.
It's absolutely terrible.
Hi, it's Anna and Raven. What do you do to get your kid to eat?
This one's pretty simple. I mean, luckily my kids are very young. I put all the healthy snacks down where they can actually reach them. And the less healthy things are really up high where they can't get at them.
It's pretty smart. I mean, on the other hand, I'm going to figure out a stool. Like, if I know that there's Oreos up there, I'm getting a stool.
Definitely.
Or a ladder if need be. I'm going to do what it takes, whatever it takes.
I think they're still a little too young to put that together, but in a year or two, yeah, I'm going to have to come up with a new plan.
Don't underestimate the ability of a kid to figure out a fulcrum if there's a bag of chili cheese Fritos up there.
It is true, though. The little muffins are on the bottom drawer, and that's what she eats constantly. I don't know. I guess just because she knows it's there. It's also one of the three things she eats. I can't imagine if I put a head of cauliflower down there, she's automatically going to pick it up and try to eat it like an apple. But I'll try. I'll try anything at this point. I think it's more aggravating as a parent, like, that this is my second child to have these issues, because I already did this one time. I knew all the hacks and tricks. I read all the books. I did all the internet research. So why is this happening, and why can't I get my toddler to eat anything?
Do you think it's frustrating because, I mean, it sounds to me like you think you're just going to ace being a mom the second time around, right? That the kid is just going to fall in line because, again, you've got all those little tricks and things. You prepared yourself.
Yeah. So, you know, the thing, Raven, is that, like, the first time, when you're a first-time parent, you worry about everything. You worry a lot. But for when you have another child, most of the time those worries go out the window. You don't get as stressed as you did the first time around. So when Dakota, my toddler, became like a really picky eater and she wouldn't eat very many things, I was like, no big deal. It's a phase. But this is a phase that's lasted a couple years now. And now it's like an issue because I need that child to eat, you know?
Yeah, I worry about growth if the existence is just hot dogs, strawberries.
Yeah.
Like, seems like there'd be something missing from your pyramid, right? The food pyramid we see.
Yeah. What is your tip, your hack, your thing that you do to get your child to eat, to try new things, to just eat anything? 1-800-330-9999. Hi, it's Anna and Raven.
I don't necessarily have a hack, but I actually had a suggestion that you might want to consider taking your daughter to see a food therapist. When kids have that limited a diet, there's sometimes a sensory processing issue going on. And so it goes beyond just not wanting to eat, that there might be something neurologically that they need help with.
I think the bigger issue is that she's stubborn. She's always been incredibly stubborn. Even the doctors have said it. Remember when I thought she was deaf, Raven?
Yes.
I brought her to the doctor because I thought that she had hearing issues. And the doctor said there's nothing wrong with her hearing. She's just ignoring you. Mm-hmm. And turned out that was true. I think this is a power thing.
What if we could get a new business going, though? Because I kind of like this idea here. So what if we went Matrix and Inception, right? Mm-hmm. So what if we put her in a dreamlike state and then I implanted in her mind the mm-hmm. thought that she wanted broccoli? Like, okay. It's like being hypnotized to quit smoking, but it's the opposite. And Leo DiCaprio's in the movie.
Oh, can you hypnotize babies? We should try that.
Oh, yeah. No, in a dream state, they'd be easily susceptible to that. Definitely get some broccoli.
Hi, it's Anna and Raven. How do you get your kids to eat?
I don't know if your children like smoothies, but I get her to eat because I make everything into a smoothie. I put the vegetables in a smoothie. So I put, like, spinach and strawberries in a smoothie. And she'll think she's actually eating ice cream. I also take bananas and I make them into ice cream. Another thing I do is I think it helps if they think they're cooking. So I get her to put stuff in the food that we're making, and then she's more apt to eat it. Hmm. What do you think about that?
That I've tried. So I try to make her part of the cooking, but that doesn't necessarily work. Because she'll cook it, and then she'll feed it to me. I'm a baby, but she won't put it in her mouth. Yeah.
That's great. Like Buffalo Bill. It eats the food now, and she watches you as you devour it. How's that spinach smoothie, Mom? And Ann Raven, what's your hack to get your kids to eat?
Well, sometimes it's just not to try to get them to eat. If you can let them play with foods, let them paint with broccoli heads or florets, bite into it and pick it up and make a game out of it to drop it into a cup. If you can get it in their mouth, you're halfway there. If the fear of it is over, then their tongue can actually see if it likes it.
Well, now I got to get some tasty paint.
Right. I can already see my walls covered in broccoli paint.
Taking me back to my paste days right there.
Dakota, what do you like to eat?
I like to eat hot dogs and bananas.
Hot dogs and bananas. Anything else?
No.
That is a conversation that I have with my toddler regularly because a child will not eat anything. How do you get your kids to eat? My older one, I mean, I had these issues, but I had all the tips and tricks and I got her to eat. This little one, she's driving me crazy. On our text line, when my children were younger, I would bribe them into eating things. So bribe them with something you know she really likes or wants to do.
Like what? Like money?
$20.
She's 3 years old.
Eat one spoon of peas and mommy's going to give you $20 to put in your piggy bank. How about that?
If you finish your plate, we'll buy you a car when you're 16. I mean, seriously.
1-800-330-9999. It's Anna and Raven. What's that hack that you have to get your kids to eat?
All right. So toddlers never like to say yes to anything you have to say to them. So I take a bite of the food and I put it at the end of a fork and I say, don't eat it. Because Cookie Monster's coming, and he desperately wants to fight his food. And then I look away, and guess what they do?
Mm.
They eat the food.
Every time. Can't have Cookie Monster have any joy.
Well, I do something similar, a little bit more evil, though. I tell her that her sister is going to eat her dinner. So, like, it works sometimes. So I'll say something like, oh, I'll just give it to Hayden. Oh, you don't want this? You know, whatever it is, like chicken nugget. And I'll be like, I'm just going to give it to your sister. And for some reason, it infuriates her. Her sister may have a bite of the chicken nugget that she's turned down for the last 3 hours that's ice cold like a brick.
I mean, they love each other, but at the same time, like, she's definitely aiming for her demise.
Yeah. Hi, it's Anna and Raven. What's your hack for kids to eat?
I just give them all dips. I have lots of dips available at home. Dips from, ketchup, mustard dips, honey mustard, barbecue sauce. We could go on and on. I even try some hummus every once in a while. You know, anything mashed up healthy things can be easily misconstrued as something that might be unhealthy. They like that.
And my wife tried to trick me with this, too, by putting in yogurt dips all over the place. You know what I know? Well, yogurt dips are gross.
Right.
All right.
Sure.
I figured that out. But it did fool me the first few times. You're like, oh, what is this? And then you dip something in there and you're like, no, that's not what I'm looking for. But if you're a kid, no, it'd be easier to fool them. I could see that.
You're like, this isn't blue cheese dressing.
I was immediately like, what? This ain't ranch. Where's my ranch dressing at?
Hi, it's Anna and Raven. How did you get your kid to eat? Some hacks.
Well, I am a huge fan of charcuterie boards, so I figured why not do that for kids? So I make like little snack boards. So there's like tiny little different things, like different meats and cheeses too, and they can just try anything that they like.
All right, it sounds awesome. Sounds a little pricey day by day because I'm going to come by and graze that thing all day, but it would work. It would get me to eat.
It would work for an adult. I feel like it wouldn't work for Dakota.
You don't think so?
She would immediately reject everything on the charcuterie board, and then I would just be annoyed that I spent the last half hour of my life cutting up things into cute little cubes for absolutely no reason.
So you would eat it, and then she would take the board and break something with it.
Absolutely. That's exactly what would happen.
It's like, or I can see it.
She would want to paint on it. Like it would not be for whatever it was intended for. I'm glad it works for your child, though. So, Raven, some website called Finance Buzz is paying someone $1,100 to make a breakup song playlist. So how it works is that you have 24 hours to listen to breakup songs. You can't, like, leave this room. So it's continuously 24 hours in this room with all different breakup songs. And then you make the playlist. It's all in preparation for breakup season, which is right now, which follows cuffing season. Which is when people were just, you know.
And we got to sandwich it in before Valentine's Day.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
So it's going to be a busy couple weeks. I understand. Mm-hmm.
Right. So, this is when people dump people because they don't want to spend Valentine's Day together, just like you said. So there turns out that there's different stages of breaking up, and they want a playlist for each of these stages. But I'm looking at the stages, Raven, and I think that pretty much between the two of us, we could pick the number one song on the playlist based on just what the stage is.
I mean, I've been dumped many times in my life and listened to plenty of sad music as a man. No question about it. As a matter of fact, I've been listening to some sad music this week.
Have you really?
Yeah. Sometimes I get in those moods, and when I just put together my YouTube playlist, it would blow your mind.
All right.
Seriously.
So the first... very strange. The first stage of breaking up is denial. Mm. So what song would we choose for the denial stage?
I've got something for that, and I've been listening to it this week already. I never would do anything for love. I'd run right into hell and back. Dun, He would do anything for love, Anna, all right? He'd never lie to you. And that's a fact. It's desperation. You're calling back to them and saying, listen, are you serious? You're going to walk away from this? I'm the best that you've ever had. I would do anything for love. Rest in peace, Meatloaf.
But he won't do that.
No, well, he won't do that.
I mean, he won't do that, though.
It's my favorite Diet Coke commercial of all times, too, by the way. That's a great commercial.
Second stage of breaking up is anger. And the perfect song for that playlist is certainly this. And I'm here to remind you of the mess you
left when you went away. I mean, if you ever had a girlfriend like that, you'll never forget that. Because Alanis Morissette set your face on fire. She set your face on fire.
After what happened in that movie theater, she's never going to let you live that down. She's still mad.
Smashing windows out of your car. She's going to key it. All those things. The police aren't even going to help you press charges. They're going to be like, dude, that one's really angry. Be careful. Be careful.
The next stage of breaking up is depression. If you're going to make a playlist, you definitely have to have this song on it. Say something, I'm giving up on you. Be sorry. Oh my God.
I mean, I love those guys. They're really, really, really nice guys. But it's a really, really depressing song.
When you hear that song, I immediately just look off into the distance and I kind of get withdrawn and just sadness comes over you.
I had to pull the clips. In that video, an elderly man that looks like any person's grandfather that served in WW2, a great man, crawls into the bed of his deceased wife and sobs.
If that doesn't go on the depressed playlist, I don't know what does.
I mean, I could barely handle watching it for 10 seconds.
And the last the last stage of the breakup that they want to create a playlist for is acceptance. And listen, if you're going to have an acceptance, that's when you rejoice. And you've got to listen to this.
You got to say it's final, man. Gonna put it out there. I don't hate you, Jake G. I don't, but I needed something to pick me up after that dude crawling into that bed. I did.
Right, it's true. So Finance Buzz, save yourself the $1,100. Just send the check right to us. We already did all the work for you. Let's play Did You Get Fired? We did this yesterday and we had so much fun. We were like, we need to do this again today. 1-800-330-9999. How it works is you tell us a story of something that happened at work, and then we gotta guess, did you get fired or not? Hi, it's Anna and Raven. What happened at your job?
So I went on a couple of vacations that were approved in writing by my boss. Two separate occasions. One was right when I was hired. I notified them in the interview. And then one was about 3 months in.
3 months in after you had taken one that you already told them. So you didn't tell them about the second one, though, in the interview. Did you know about the second one at that time? Did you booked it after you had taken the job and started the job?
I did not know about it. It was a quick wedding that was going on in the family that we got to save the dates a certain day. And as soon as I got them the next day, I asked for approval.
What do you think, Anna? Got fired?
He got fired. Absolutely got fired. I think that when it comes to vacations, even though you're supposed to, we're in this new mentality where you're supposed to be able to be accepting and take the time and it's good for our mental health. I think a lot of companies still frown on it. And the fact that you took two vacations in 3 months, you lost your job.
I guess I'll agree, right? If you've got an old school boss, they want to see you there. Did you?
I was fired, but after the vacation.
Of course. Go ahead. Enjoy yourself. Welcome back. Find a job.
They approved it. They had me come in for a couple of days. That Thursday, they're like, hey, we just got to let you know we're letting you go.
Well, that stinks. Mm-hmm. Then you had all the time to vacation after that.
There's nothing worse than getting fired when you get back from a break, right? Because you're broke. You're counting on that money to get back in the coffers, man. You're counting on that cash.
Hi, it's Anna and Raven. What happened at work? And we'll guess if you got fired.
Okay, so I was working at a hotel when I was in college, and I had a Saturday morning shift. It started at 7 a.m. and I had gone out the night before and was extremely hungover. So I was sitting there taking calls. I had a glass of orange juice, accidentally knocked it over, shorted out the entire switchboard for the whole hotel.
Oh my gosh.
What?
Now, were there signs all over the place? Was it a well-known thing that nobody could have a drink near that? Because that's how it is in these studios here at the radio station, and we always have drinks in here. Mm-hmm. And when you short something out in here, I mean, it could be worth $100,000.
If not more.
No, I don't think there were any signs. No, I mean, yeah. I mean, I don't think I was supposed to be, you know, drinking or eating up there. But, you know, it was 7 o'clock on a Saturday. Nobody was around.
I'm going to guess that you did not get fired.
I'm going to agree.
I did not get fired. They actually billed me, and they told corporate that it was a guest that did it. So it got covered.
They covered for you. That's nice.
I love that. Right? Ride or die
corporate
right there.
Would have been like, fire her. Right.
This has been oddly so much fun. 1-800-330-9999. You tell us what you did wrong at work, and then we get to guess whether or not you got fired for it. Raven, we've been playing this for the last 2 days. You still haven't told me any of your stories.
Well, you know, I mean, the thing that's so much fun is because everybody's been in a scenario where they've been in real danger, right? So I can remember I went to work at a station up in Boston, and this is right when September 11th happened. And so, you know, there was a big format change. We did all this talk for the whole time. And everybody was talking about the fact that the radio station like dropped the music and went to full news for 24 hours. So I'm there on a Saturday and the New York Times calls the phone and they said, listen, we need to get a photo of somebody there for a huge article we're going to run in the Times. And of course, me being there 3-4 weeks would be the last person on that list. But I was like, come on in. They came in, they took the photo, they ran the story on a Sunday edition of the paper. I printed a copy and put it in every person's mailbox. I was in the office first thing on a Monday morning. Bosses were angry, Anna Zapp.
I mean, I would have fired you for that, but I'm going to guess you did not get fired because this is radio.
I had a contract, so they would have had to pay me for a very long time. So I kept that job.
What a stinky thing to do, Raven. We'll have that conversation later.
It's a great photo.
Hi, it's Anna and Raven. What happened at your job? We're going to guess if you got fired.
I used to do landscaping, and I took one of the machines at a property, and downhill, machine went out of control. I let it go. It went through the wooden fence and into the woods. And got stuck there. We had to get a tow truck to get it out.
Oh, man. That sounds like a bad day, but I'm going to guess that you actually did not get fired.
I'm going to agree. I'm going to say that you didn't get fired for that. Actually, I changed my mind. I think you got fired.
What happened?
No, I didn't get fired. I fetched up and I told the company. They did give me a big slap on the wrist, so I got written up.
Okay.
I mean, getting chewed out, getting written up.
Yeah.
I've survived that before. I feel like I'll survive that again, you know, in my future at some point.
I worked at a country club. It was one of my very first jobs. I was 16 years old. And one night after cleanup, we worked in the pool area, like we worked in the snack bar. We took a golf cart and we flipped it and we broke the golf cart.
Who got fired?
Well, I don't know if it was fired, but we were asked not to come back next season. So I guess technically, but we finished the 3 weeks left of summer.
Contract non-renewal.
Yeah.
You know, a lot like that in landscaping, man. You know how it is, buddy. They need you working the next day. Like, they'd like to fire you, but they need your body. They need you there. Hey, Anna and Raven, fired or not fired, tell us what happened to you at work, and we're going to guess whether or not you lost your job.
Okay. I was asked to show somebody in the office how to run a mailing list from a membership database, you know, for certain aged people.
Mm-hmm.
So I showed her. She got the list and all. She sent out a mailing, but she never had the letter checked by her superiors.
Oh, what was on that letter? That's the question.
I'm going to guess typos.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess, some problems that made them look foolish to many of their customers.
Were you were not their direct reporter, right? Like, she didn't report to you, the person?
Direct supervisor?
Nope, and she had other people she reported to.
I'm going
to
say you got fired just by the animosity in your voice.
I guess I'll agree with Anna.
Yeah, if I did, I got fired because of what she did.
Wait, what is this, 1976? Let's get a labor attorney on this. I'm mad now.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem fair at all.
It was a union.
Man. Well, when the union blows you out, like, I mean, come on, I don't want to take them on.
But you know what they say, when one door closes, another one opens.
That's right.
Always.
That's
true. Right. Are you a trivia nerd? Do you think that you can beat Raven and can't beat Raven? A lot of people say yes, but when they actually compete against him, don't do well at all. Are there tips and tricks to being a trivia expert? Jeffrey Williams is a former Jeopardy contestant, and Jeffrey, you say yeah.
I do think there's things you can do. I think one of the biggest things you can do with trivia is trust yourself that you know it. Trust yourself that you have the answer on the tip of your tongue instead of thinking like, oh, maybe I don't know that, or oh, maybe I don't know what this is. I think if you trust your instincts and trust what your brain and your memory bank serve up to you, that probably will help you go a long way, especially if this is a contest that involves speed and the speed of recall. You don't have time to second guess your answers.
And it does.
Jeffrey, I always think that when I see certain games, they all have kind of a cadence, right? They have a little bit of a timing to them. Jeopardy has that. Wheel of Fortune has that. They always say, like, you know, get the vowels, do this, do that. Like, they always believe that there's tricks to it. But with Jeopardy, you have to fire away. And sometimes when I'm watching Jeopardy, I'll start firing away. And, man, I'll be hitting them left and right. It's so impressive. If somebody walks through the room, I'll be like, you see that? I'll raise my eyebrows, and they think I'm a genius. Other times, I will literally get 8 out of 9 wrong, but I'll keep firing away. And I think that, wow, there's probably a lot to what you're saying.
Just let it rip. I mean, Jeopardy's a little bit of a special case. Jeopardy's a reflex test about winning the buzzer, and then it's about, can you answer this question in about a second and a half of thinking about it? It is, like, when you're watching Jeopardy home, it's great because you're a champ, because you are the smartest guy in the room.
Right.
When you're actually on Jeopardy, you're one of 15 smartest guys in the room, and everybody else is just as like, let's go, let's go, let's go, let's go. The pressure when you're actually on the Jeopardy stage is so much turned up over when you're watching at home with, like, your wife and your kids or your family. It's kind of wild, but you have to let that go, and you just go for it. You have to swing for it. You have to trust that you know the answers to question. In some trivia questions also, you have to not be embarrassed that you know some of the stuff, especially some of the esoteric stuff. Like, you have to just sort of not be embarrassed to know that, like, the sitcom Alf, it was the Tanner family. It was Willie Tanner. Willie! Like, you have to not be embarrassed that a lot of this stuff is just rattling around in your brain and just throw it out there.
Well, it's funny you bring that up, because a lot of times people always say to me, like, well, why does he know so much about pop culture? Like, isn't that embarrassing? I'm like, I don't know. It's made him really good at this game. Like, you know, like, he can rattle off everything about Britney Spears. Is it weird? Maybe, but.
Right. Some people might be judged on that. I am just judged favorably with it. That's all.
You got to not be embarrassed of these things that you know. Like, if you know the lyrics to Jump, Jump from Crisscross, just let it fly. It doesn't matter that it's 30 years old.
I mean, embarrassed. I based my life on that, Jeff. Seriously. Come on.
Yeah, it's funny. Raven had said one time that you have to listen to the way Anna writes questions. That's me. That, you know, how I write the questions. Because there's always a clue in the question. Like, wait for the... And the truth of the matter is, he's right. As much as I don't want to say that, there has to be a clue, something. And I think there's the same thing for Jeopardy. A lot of times there's a clue in there, and it's trying to figure out what that clue is.
Any good trivia is going to have it.
Any good trivia is going to have it. That makes it fun. That's fun for the writing of the trivia questions. And you also have to put that clue in there because you want to make sure you guide people to a correct and very specific answer. I will say this, the Jeopardy writers, they do encode clues in almost everything. There's a little bit of a riddle in the clue that gets you there.
Jeffrey Williams, former Jeopardy contestant, trivia expert. Thanks for giving the tips. Let's see if some people can take Raven down.
Oh, it's on.
You're welcome. Raven, they're coming at you. I've empowered your audience to take you down.
I wouldn't call it a resolution. I was just thought to myself at the beginning of the year that I wanted to be more involved. I wanted to do more things in the community and, you know, just see where else I could help. So when I found out that Dakota, my toddler's nursery school, had a board of directors, I was like, oh, I'll be on that. I'll be on a board. It makes me sound like fancy, right? Like I have a real job.
I'm on the
board.
Put that
on my resume.
I'm
on the board. I'm on the board of directors for this preschool with 30 children. This is what I do. You know?
It does sound crazy to me. But, you know, I mean, hey, if you're looking to have some impact, I guess, there, get them while they're young, Anna Zapp.
Right. I figure I'm qualified. Like, you know, believe it or not, I have a master's in education that I haven't done anything with in 20 years.
Yeah.
But okay.
Good.
You know?
Resurrect that thing. Like, yeah, you're definitely qualified.
Let me brush that right off. So I reach out to the school and, you know, I'm like, hey, I'm volunteering to be on the board of directors. And it was like, wait a minute, ma'am. We just don't allow anybody to be on the board of directors. Like, you have to be like accepted. You have to like run and be accepted to be on the board of directors. And I was like, wait a minute. I have to campaign to be on a board of directors for a bunch of 2, 3, and 4-year-olds. And I was like, I'm up to the challenge. So
don't you dare me.
Right. So I decided that I should make a commercial to show how serious I am. And Raven, here it is. Want to solve all the nation's problems? end the division in this great country? Then vote for me, Anna Zapp. I will be the best grown-up ever to serve on a nursery school's board of directors. Bake sales? I love brownies. I mean, I don't bake and probably won't have time to actually work the event, but I'll make sure they're individually wrapped and ask someone if they're nut-free. Playground drama? Not with this mama. I'll grease those slides every day with butter so those kids can experience the speed of light. Snack time? More like yeah time. Goldfish and string cheese all day, every day. Let's do this. So get me that finger paint and I'll draw you a number one, because that's what I'll be. The number one person on the board of directors for a nursery school. It's Anna Zapp time, because you love nap time.
It's true. I do love nap time.
It took me 3 hours to come up with it's Anna Zapp time because you love nap time.
I mean,
just
you don't
so
have
you know.
A lot of stuff that rhymes with it, right?
Yeah.
So, you know.
I feel like we should put it on buttons. We should sell it on t-shirts.
Yeah.
It's Anna Zapp time if you love nap time.
Well, good luck getting
thank
past
you.
The present board. Good luck.
Oh, thank you.
Couples Court on the Anna and Raven Show.
Every day a couple joins us. They let us know what their disagreement is about, and then you decide who's right. Amanda and Joe. Amanda, let's start with you. What's going on?
It kind of bothers me that my boyfriend, Joe, he goes on Instagram and likes his ex-wife's photos. And they're not just, like, the photos of him and his kids with her. It's, like, photos of her taking selfies, and they're super thirst-trappy and hot. And, like, it just really, I don't know. It makes me feel weird.
How long you guys been dating?
About a year.
Joe, what's up with that?
I mean, I don't really understand what the problem is. You know, she's the mother of my children, and luckily we have a really good relationship for the kids. I don't really understand what's the big deal. It's just the like, you know.
This is the problem with the thumbs up, Anna, right? Is that thumbs up like a, hey, good for you, or is that thumbs up like a, hey, what's up with that?
It is your ex-wife.
Yeah.
I 100% would understand if it's pictures of the kids. Of course, you know, that's a different story. But if she's just posting selfies and you're liking it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, having a good relationship with your ex is one thing there, Joe. But I mean, on the other hand, you know, doing that to the detriment of your new relationship, your current relationship, seems a little bit weird. I'd always want to be encouraging to my exes, given the fact that most of them were crazy and I didn't want them to do anything uber crazy after we broke it off. But that was just me. If it's a thirsty photo, you got to stay away from that. How are you even following your ex anymore?
Well, again, you know, we're friends, so I don't think it's that strange that I'm following her. You know, we have kids together. It's just the like, again, you know, it doesn't really matter.
There's some friends I have, Raven, and I don't know if you have the same thing, that it doesn't matter what they post. I'm always going to like it because it is a support thing. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So are you
exactly.
feeling like that, Joe? Like you're just supporting, like, hey, we're a team here, regardless going forward?
Yeah, I'm just supporting her, you know. If she, you know, felt pretty enough to post a photo, you know, I support her. I want her to have a good life. If that makes her feel good, then great.
Knowing that it bothers Amanda so much, you don't take that into consideration?
I just feel like it's a little jealousy, unwarranted jealousy.
Amanda, does he like all your photos?
Right, because I'm getting in your photos right now, Amanda. I'm getting right in there.
I mean, not really. He doesn't like every single one of my photos. And it's just like, if that's your ex-wife, like, your ex is for a reason. I just, like, don't really understand why that's, like, still going on.
Well, we can see what the audience has to say, because they may agree with you, Amanda. It's not textbook normal that you're liking thirst trap pictures. It's one thing if it's the kids. It's another if it's just provocative selfies. But they may see your side, too, Joe. Essentially, she'll always be a family member. She's the mother to your children. And what's wrong with just supporting her and having a good relationship so the kids can see, hey, look, mom and dad are cool.
1-800-330-9999. Whose side are you on? It's the Couples Court with Anna and Raven.
I don't know. I'm torn on this one. So Amanda and Joe have been dating for about a year, and Joe has an ex-wife. He has children with his ex-wife, and his ex-wife posts a lot of pictures on Instagram, not just of the kids, but of herself. But Amanda says that Joe likes those pictures. Like, even the selfies, as she says, are thirst traps. Mm-hmm. And she's got a problem with that.
Yeah, and I think that in today's world, that makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, he's dressing her down. He says he's building up his ex and just trying to be cool. That's what Joe says. But he's dressing Amanda down publicly. I mean, imagine, right? You are Amanda's friend or her family member or her parents, and you've met Joe, and you see his social activity just like anybody else, and it's confusing to you.
He just wants to support his ex-wife.
Oh, yeah, you look great. Yeah, let me give that a heart. Let me give that a like. I mean, he's supporting his ex-wife when he has children if he's making his child support payments and he's picking up his kids on the days he's supposed to. That's how you support your ex-wife.
What do you think? 1-800-330-9999. Couples Court.
The girlfriend's side. Joe didn't even come up with the word support until Anna brought it up. And then, why shouldn't the girlfriend care? He sounds like he belongs with his ex-wife.
I'm with you. It's a conflict. I don't think it's easily resolved.
Isn't social media fake? Like, who? I don't know.
No,
I battle with this.
If it's not fake to somebody else, it's all the eye of the beholder. Clearly, Amanda's stating it's not fake to her.
Well, all right. Whose side are you on? 1-800-330-9999. Couples Court. So Amanda and Joe have been dating for about a year now. And, well, Amanda has a problem that Joe still likes his ex-wife's photos on Instagram. And not the ones that she posts of the kids or anything like that. Like the ones that she calls thirst trappy and like selfies of herself.
Yeah, I mean, it would give me pause, too. I'd be worried about it, right? I mean, if you're Amanda, you're seeing these things. Amanda says, too, he doesn't even like a lot of my photos. Like, it's one thing if you're liking the photos that are of your kids. It's something else if you're liking the ones like, she's getting ready to go out in the bathroom, and he's like, hey, looks good. Or you put some eyeballs on it. Like, that's a little bit weird.
No, but he just likes it. He says he's just being supportive, and it's this ex, and they have a good relationship, the mother of his children. What do you think? 1-800-330-9999. Couples Court.
I'm on the girlfriend's side. He should not be liking her pictures, and she should realize that if by now, a year, he doesn't get her an engagement ring, I guess he's finding over that ex-wife and wants to go back.
I mean, I'm with you on the liking the ex's photos, but 1 year on an engagement ring seems a little bit nuts, right? We're going to put a time limit on. It's been a year. You don't have a ring. I'm moving on with my life.
You see, she better make sure she gets the ring on it.
All right.
I mean, I wouldn't be in a rush to jump into a relationship with somebody that I thought was still hanging on to something else. Anna, for me, I'm more concerned, like, is he still involved with the ex?
It's his ex-wife. If it's an ex-girlfriend, then no. Like, you shouldn't be like, hi, it's Anna and Raven. Whose side are you on?
Oh, definitely her. This is not right. You know, when you break up, I have an ex and we had a child together, and I didn't obsess over her pictures. I demonstrated to my child that we were together and friends in front of him when we got together. We exchanged or we did things in front of him. But he's not all in on his current relationship. If he's stalking his ex's photos to like them, that's just not right.
There is some human nature, though, of just checking in every once in a while, see what they're posting, seeing what's going on.
Once you understand that, you know, everybody else can see that you're liking their photos, like, don't you stop?
Well, the like is a different situation. Anna and Raven, whose side are you on?
Hey, I just heard this is Jeff Olby from Floyd. I heard that guy's explanation. Can I share my 2 cents? This dude's trying to get down his wife's pants again. Unbelievable.
I'm with you.
That's a guy, Toad. He's full of it.
I agree with you. I think he's still hooking up with his ex. I agree.
For a like on a picture?
Come on. Right now. I mean, it sounds like you want to. Like, listen, a lot of relationships don't end cleanly. I'm with that guy.
The verdict is in. Jury foreman, what are the results?
Amanda, our audience agreed with you today. If feels awkward, and if you don't like it, then Joe, if you have a future with Amanda, you need to be respectful of her opinion.
All right, then. The audience can think what they want, I guess.
Yeah, they got me convinced.
Amanda, that's got to make you happy, right?
Yeah, it makes me feel not so crazy anymore about the whole situation.
Yeah, I mean, it would all give me pause. Best of luck, Amanda.
Thanks.
All right. Well, thanks anyway.
If you have an issue, too, send an email. couplescourt@annaonraven.com.
Can't beat Raven.
The Can't Beat Raven cash jackpot is $1,400 thanks to Discover Card. If you're a valued customer, you deserve a simple gesture of appreciation from your credit card company. And that's why Discover matches all the cash back you've earned at the end of your first year. Discover, exceptionally common sense. Learn more at discover.com/match. Limitations apply. Hey, Jen, you're up.
Hey,
can you
guys.
Please ask Raven to leave the room.
Raven, please leave the room.
Sure, you got it. Good luck, Jen.
So Raven is walking out of the studio. When that door closes, he's not going to be able to hear us at the soundproof studio. I'm going to ask you 5 pop culture questions. You have 3 seconds to answer each one. Raven comes back in, answers the same questions. Whoever gets the most right wins. Ties go to Raven, but if you beat him today, $1,400. You ready to do it, Jen?
Yes, I'm ready.
All right, let's go. Number one, Lin-Manuel Miranda says he has said no in the past to hosting the Oscars because he says it's just not his skill set. He directed what autobiographical musical about Rent creator Jonathan Larson?
Oh, I don't know.
Number two, Bachelor Clayton made history by being the first to take back a rose. The number one song with the word rose in it is the title Kiss from a Rose. Who sang that song?
Theo.
Number three, after a contestant on Wheel of Fortune became the first of the season to win $100,000, she had an unusual request. She wanted to help sweep up the confetti. Who was the first Wheel of Fortune host? He also hosted Love Connection.
Pat Sajak.
Number four, David Ortiz is the only player going into the Baseball Hall of Fame this year. Where is the Baseball Hall of Fame?
Cooperstown, New York.
And number five, a lot of controversy about why Adele canceled her Las Vegas residency. And rumors are that it wasn't COVID related, but she had conflicts with the venue. What song from what song did Adele sing for the James Bond franchise?
Oh.
Time's up.
I don't know.
Okay, let's bring Raven back in. Wave him in, please.
You.
Jen only got 2 right.
Not too good, Jen. Let's see how I do. $1,400 on the line.
Number one, Lin-Manuel Miranda says he has no interest to hosting the Oscars because it's just not in his skill set, even though he's been asked before. He directed what autobiographical musical about Rent creator Jonathan Larson?
I have no idea.
Tick, Tick, Boom. It's on Netflix. I just watched it, and it's fantastic.
I mean, if it ain't Hamilton, I have no idea.
Number 2.
I had a friend that was on Rent. I should know that question.
You should know that. All right, number 2. Bachelor Clayton made history by being the first to take back a rose. The number 1 song with the word rose in it is from Kiss from a Rose. Who sang that song?
That's Seal. That's easy. And Cassidy, yes. Get out of here. Now get rid of Shanae, man.
The fact that you watch The Bachelor now is very strange.
I don't know. I got sucked in this year. I don't know what happened to me.
Number 3. After a contestant on Wheel of Fortune became the first of the season to win $100,000, she had an unusual request. She wanted to help sweep up the confetti. Who was the first host of Wheel of Fortune? He also hosted Love Connection.
It's got to be Chuck Woolery, right?
Yes. Number 4, David Ortiz is the only player going to the Baseball Hall of Fame this year. Where is the Baseball Hall of Fame?
It's in New York, Cooperstown.
Yes. Number 5, a lot of controversy about why Adele canceled her Las Vegas residency. And rumors are that it wasn't COVID-related, but she had conflict with the venue. What song did Adele sing for the James Bond franchise?
Skyfall.
I'm sorry, Jen. He beat you 4-2 today. That gets you an Anna and Raven t-shirt.
Sure. It's Jen, and I cannot beat Raven.
Better luck next time. Enjoy that shirt, girl. $1,500 tomorrow, Anna. That's a nice round number.
Yeah, you think you have what it takes to beat Raven? Remember, you could always sign up to play at annaandraven.com.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring.
Right here, right now.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.